Hi there, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for attending the latest in our series of webinars on Myanmar law and tax matters. And today we're going to be looking at legal aspects of restructuring loans in Myanmar and also the Myanmar tax updates. I'll be doing the legal side, and my name is Nick, and Diba, my colleague, will be doing the tax matters following that. Here we are. And we'll look at the overview first of the current situation in Myanmar. Next slide, please. So I think we're all familiar probably with what's going on in Myanmar and what's happened over the last few years. COVID happened and was, of course, had a big effect on business in Myanmar. And we had a change of government, a military takeover, which is still causing problems in Myanmar, particularly in the border states. And all trade and inbound foreign investments have been affected, seriously affected by the crisis, political crisis, and also the banking downturn and the general economy suffering from all these things. There's a fixed exchange rate set by the Central Bank of Myanmar, CBM, but there's a black market rate, which for unofficial transactions at a much higher exchange rate. So we're seeing foreign investors in many sectors have exited or are exiting Myanmar, or they're reducing their commitments. And although there are many that are remaining, perhaps because it's more difficult for them to exit in sort of infrastructure projects, but it's not a good picture at the moment in Myanmar in terms of new business. Next slide, please. Next, thank you. So before all this happened, there was a thriving market in loans in what was a dollarized economy in Myanmar. So many US dollar and other foreign currency loans to foreign and local investors from abroad and from local. Offshore loans have always had to have approval from the CBM. And approvals were not refused very often in our experience, as long as the interest rate was in line with the international market rates. And then, of course, came the military government, and the SAC, the State Administration Council, announced measures that were to de-dollarize the economy, including the restrictions on foreign currency holdings and on loans into Myanmar. So we'll go into those in a bit more detail. But effectively, this has caused the foreign exchange loan market to dry up. And there's been a huge focus on rescheduling and restructuring foreign currency loans in Myanmar. And it's what we're seeing is that there are multiple reschedulings because lenders are clearly reluctant to put their borrowers into default because that would compound the problems that they have in effectively getting paid. They would just be there enforcing their security if they have it, but not able to repatriate the funds arising from any sale of that security. So it's a continuing situation where loans are being rescheduled, and payments are being deferred they have been for quite some time and will continue for quite some time, I think. Next slide. So if we look at the key notifications and regulations that have been issued by the CBM in relation to these issues, The first one, which was the key one, which was notification number 12 at the top of 2022. So all entities in Myanmar, except exempted entities, which we can go into a bit later, had to convert all foreign currency received from abroad or held in their account into a Myanmar chat. And that there's been relaxation of that since then, but this was the starting position, and then the next step was that all outward remittances of foreign currency could be made only on receipt of approval of this Foreign Exchange Supervisory Committee, which was established for the purpose. And they have to approve all payments in foreign currency out of the country, whatever type of payment, whatever currency it's in, have to get this approval. And this notification number 36 was a slight relaxation for foreign currency accounts held by these exempted enterprises, so they exporters could retain 35% of their foreign currency's amounts, and had to convert 65% of their export earnings into the local currency. The next slide. An interesting development with letter number FE1744 from the CBM, which required all licensed authorized dealer banks in Myanmar to notify their customers with foreign currency loans that they had to renegotiate the repayment schedule in order to suspend the repayment of that of interest and principal. That's all it said, the letter. It didn't say when this had to be done by, what would be the sanctions or penalties if they didn't renegotiate or didn't suspend their loans. So as far as we know, the situation is the same at the moment. Regulation has been issued that loans have to be repaid or loan agreements terminated. We're in a state of semi-suspension, but it's a clear signal from the CBM that they want to restrict or reduce the number of foreign loans coming into the country. And the final one was letter number FE2861, stating that foreign currencies held by companies with more than 35% foreign shareholdings would not need to convert their foreign currencies into MMK. This was an important relaxation, which means that companies can hold on to their foreign currency while they try to find ways to, if they need to, make payments abroad. In loan settlements or otherwise, but even though they're allowed to keep the foreign currency, they still need to get the FESC approval for any remittance of the money outside Myanmar. Next slide, please. So just looking at the restructurings that are going on, it's pretty much the same for all types of loans because of the sort of English law base that still applies in Myanmar. You would be looking at amendment agreements, which would contain all the for the original loan agreement, which would contain all the waivers of the covenants that many borrowers are in breach of, and also deferring payments, which are payments of interest and principal. And this is these are becoming very standard, and they're being repeated as the time goes by because there's still no clear solution to getting payments made, other than going through this very painful, laborious approval process. And if you're in the process, you're making changes to the interest repayment schedule that you had approved at the time of the original loan, then that will require further approval from the central bank. So you have to go to them and say, we're changing our schedule. Can we have approval? Security agreements that might have been taken out, collateral for the original loan, just remain in place and don't generally need any amending. But you're looking for security confirmations from borrowers in the amendment agreement to make sure that the security still applies to the loan. So as I said, we are looking at we're seeing multiple reschedulings on the same loans while borrowers and lenders try to work out the best way to resolve the situation. Next slide, please. Yeah, this is looking more detailed, that this is CBM approval required where the original loan repayment loan has to be changed, and it's having to obtain a new approval every time you want to change that schedule. CBM approval through the Foreign Exchange Supervisory Committee is needed for the payments of interest and principal on foreign loans via remittance from Myanmar. It's our experience that the FESC approvals are being given for reschedulings and also for loan payments to foreign lenders, but it is a mixed picture, and there are the big delays in approvals and repeated requests for additional documentation. And there doesn't seem to be any consistency in applying rules or in decisions. One factor that we've seen is that if the foreign-owned borrower is holding foreign currency in its account, for example, a cash collateral account, it is easier to obtain the approval from the FESC, because if you don't have that cash, you're going into the market, and obviously there's there can be shortages of US dollars or other foreign currencies, which make it, you know, obviously very difficult to make the payment, even if you were to get approval. So having a foreign currency in an account, which you're now allowed to hold as a foreign-owned business, is obviously an advantage. Next slide, please. A recent development which is puzzling us and I guess others is that DICA issued a notice stating that all DICA registered companies, which is all companies in Myanmar, have to submit an approval application to DICA to repatriate foreign currencies out of Myanmar. So this is in addition to the central bank approval process, and it's not clear why they're doing this. What will they be approving these loans, or will they just be sending their recommendation to the FESC? It's really not clear. It looks to us as if it's a signal that they're just putting hurdles in the way of more and more hurdles in the way of the ability to get money out of Myanmar, in foreign currency out of Myanmar, by adding an additional approval layer with no obvious purpose, because DICA is just a company administration entity. It's not it doesn't have any involvement in foreign loans or lending of any kind. So we've got to see how this pans out, but we'll update as and when we get more information from DICA as to whether they're looking actually to approve this themselves, or whether they're just passing this on to the central bank. And so far, there hasn't been any action from the CBM in relation to the requirement for Myanmar borrowers to renegotiate their loans and to suspend payments to those lenders. Loans are still being paid in some cases. If they're not rescheduled, payments are being made. There are some practical hurdles because some, for example, some US banks have suspended all US dollar transactions from Myanmar. So that's made it difficult where the US a loan is in US dollars, but it is possible for the restriction is on the Myanmar banks that are owned by Myanmar people, and the foreign banks that have branches in Myanmar don't seem to be affected by this. So it is possible to make the to get another bank to make the payment for you if you can get the agreement between the local bank and the foreign bank. And the payments can be made by a foreign bank in with a branch in Myanmar, and it's also possible to make payments in currencies other than US dollars to get around this. We've seen an example where a payment was made in Singapore dollars and then sent into a US dollar account abroad, and there were no problems on that. Next slide, please. So how do we get around the problem? How do lenders get around the problem of getting their money back and getting a repayment of the loans? One solution where it's possible and is being done is for a settlement agreement to be entered into by where there's a Myanmar borrower and where there's also an offshore co-borrower under the same loan agreement, or even if the Myanmar borrower has a foreign affiliate, it's possible, obviously, for the co-borrower offshore or the affiliate offshore to make the payments to the lender in place of the Myanmar borrower. And this does not need approval because it's all happening offshore. It doesn't need Myanmar approval unless the parties enter into a new loan agreement to put this into effect. And that would itself, that loan agreement would require approval under the normal process. So what we would be seeing, I suspect, is that the loan would become an intercompany payable on the accounts in the books of both the borrower and the affiliate or the co-borrower that's paying, without any formal loan documents, because obviously with the formal loan documents you're falling into the approval situation. So this is happening. I think auditors would need to sign this off to make sure that this is not going to create any problems. But from our point of view, it doesn't create any legal problems in Myanmar, and because there is no Myanmar element to the repayment. Next slide, please. I think I may have come to the end. I've come to the end of my section, so I'll hand you over to Diver, who can take you through the tax aspects and of this.
Thank you, Nick, for the insights for the restructuring of loans. So let's go now to the tax aspects on loan restructuring. So in Myanmar, the general taxes that would apply for financing transactions or anything in relation to loan restructuring or financing arrangement are withholding tax and stamp duty. So here, if there is a component of interest payment, then there would be a 15% withholding tax under the domestic rules, the withholding tax rate can be reduced under a double tax agreement, or it can be exempted under specific international agreements entered with Myanmar. Now, if there are components of service fees or service payments which don't qualify as a form of interest payments, then it can be subject to a 2.5% withholding tax, which can also be exempted under a double tax agreement with Myanmar. So basically, Myanmar has 8 countries that have double tax agreements. And most of the countries that we've seen for financing are with Singapore. We have also seen cases for Thailand, but most of the time transactions are with Singapore in terms of lending transactions. Now, another component for financing in Myanmar is on stamp duty. So stamp duty is a duty charge on the execution of the agreement. So financing agreements are subject to Myanmar stamp duty, depending on the type of agreement or the type of transaction. So for example, if the transaction is just a loan, there is a applicable stamp duty on that. If it's a share pledge, if it's a mortgage, then there will be a separate stamp duty applicable on those transactions. So if there are restructurings, normally there would be an amendment to the agreement, on which case there could be an additional stamp duty that would apply on those types of agreement. So currently, stamp duty on financing, in respect of loans, there are no clear provision under the Stamp Act, Myanmar Stamp Act, as to what is the applicable stamp duty for loans. Previously, we have seen a minimal amount of stamp duty, but we have also seen recently or in the recent years, the tax office applies the higher rate of 0.5%, which is similar to the stamp duty the stamp duty for similar transactions. Also for mortgages, the stamp duty, mortgages involving immovable properties, the stamp duty could be as high as 2%. So apart from this withholding tax and stamp duty, another consideration for loan restructuring would be on the recent procedures on foreign remittance, which was issued by the Ministry of Planning and Finance and became effective on 1st of May. So here, before remitting any interest payments, banks are now required to check the borrower's tax assessment and confirmation of withholding tax on interest payments. So a confirmation that the interest payments have been properly subjected to tax. It is now being required to be checked by the authorized dealer bank before you can remit the payment overseas. We will discuss the SOP in more details in later slides. Next slide, please. So here are the typical types of transactions or restructuring that we normally see with respect to financing arrangement. One is loan forgiveness. So loan forgiveness, meaning the lender would forgo the collection of the loan from a Myanmar borrower. So a key consideration for tax here is with regard to the implication of the gain or any income that may be recognized by the Myanmar borrower on the write-off or the forgiveness of the loan. So it can create a taxable gain from the perspective of the Myanmar borrower, but this can also be an avenue for restructuring or assessment of efficiency, tax efficiency, if, for example, the Myanmar borrower has significant tax assets. So these tax assets normally include prior year losses, overpaid taxes, or those that can be offset with the tax payable when recognizing the income on the loan forgiveness. So for this aspect, we normally look into account whether the gain to be recognized by the Myanmar borrower would create a taxable position to the Myanmar borrower. So if the borrower has significant losses, then for condonation of debt or the loan forgiveness can be considered as an option. If the company has an overpaid and unused tax, unused income tax in prior years, then this can also be a consideration to restructure or to arrange the existing loan structure of the company. Another point that we also we've seen in recent cases for our clients is constructive payment of loan. So constructive payment means there's no actual repayment of loan, but the payment would be made through like an offset of an asset or offsetting of an existing interco transaction. So for example, if you have a loan to your Singapore affiliate and you have an existing receivable also from that Singapore affiliate, you can, we have seen cases where it would just be an offset of that transaction. So the considerations on those types of transactions would be first, if the payment would be considered as a constructive interest payment, meaning there is no actual interest payment made by the Myanmar borrower, but the offsetting would result to a reduction of the interest payment from the perspective of the borrower, then it can still attract withholding tax. Now, we also need to consider the tax on the settlement of intercompany transactions. So in the case that I've mentioned, in some cases, there are offsetting of intercompany receivables and payables. So if there's any difference on the amounts, then that may still attract tax, whether it's a loss or it's a gain. Also, the reassignment of agreements from one party to another entity, it can also be subject to stamp duty. So normally for this case, the stamp duty is only a minimal of up to 150,000 CHAT or approximately $70. Also for these types of transactions, the transfer pricing aspects should also be considered, especially if the country of the lender is has a transfer pricing rule. So Myanmar, Turkey does not have yet specific transfer pricing guidelines, but this TP consideration should also be factored in, especially from the perspective of the receiving entity or the other entity. Another one that we have seen for loan restructuring is the conversion of debt to capital. So conversion of debt to capital means instead of writing off or offsetting, it will just be converted, meaning the existing loan would just be converted to capital. So here, for Myanmar, this type of transaction would generally not attract tax. However, if the portion of the loan to be converted or the portion of the debt to be converted pertains to interest payments, then that portion may still be subject to withholding tax. It can still be construed as a constructive payment of interest where withholding tax can be applied. So, another thing to be considered is Myanmar has no thin capitalization rules. There's no cap limit for the amount of debt that can be allowed and interest that can be claimed. But for this transaction, or I mean for claiming of interest expense, the taxpayer also needs to consider that it must be commensurate to the volume of the business, or it's not too excessive, because otherwise there could still be risk that this can be questioned. Now, for conversion of debt, approval from the central bank is required before the conversion of debt can take place. Next slide, please. So those are the tax aspects in relation to the loan restructuring. So now we will discuss the recent tax updates by the IRD and by the MOPF in relation to foreign currency payments or remittances. So the first one is on MOPF's or Ministry of Planning and Finance SOP effective 1st of May 2023. So in this MOPF guideline, the government want from our assessment, the government wants to ensure that before remitting any payment overseas, the payments must have been properly reported for tax, and or the taxpayer has properly registered, properly filed the return, or properly paid the tax in relation to the transaction. So this is the first clarity from the MOPF in relation to the types of documents that the taxpayer need to present when remitting a specific type of payment. So for the first one, payments for purchase of goods and profit remittances such as dividends or branch profit. So for branch profits or dividend for dividend payments, it is normally required by the bank to get or to secure a copy of a tax clearance or a tax assessment from the company even prior to the issuance of this SOP. But it now made clear what types of tax clearance would be required, and it also applies now to purchase of goods from overseas. So here, if the company is under a self-assessment system, meaning they are registered with the tax office following this SAS system of the IRD, then the taxpayer will only need to provide a copy of a confirmation of self-assessment known as SAS-1. So SAS-1 is like a confirmation of a tax payment on a yearly basis that the company has paid and has declared these taxes to the tax office. So in this case, the requirement now by the bank would be to for the taxpayer to present the copy of the SAS-1 for that particular year, or I mean for the prior year if the current year is not yet available. Same case for those companies under official assessment system. So they call it notice of demand. So it's also similar to SAS-1. For a newly registered taxpayer, the only requirement is just to provide the copy of the TIN certificate as issued by the IRD. Now for salary payments, the company or the individual must provide a certificate of personal income tax payment, which is known as Form 15A. Form 15A is the one prepared by the employer and is given to the employee to support that the or to justify that the employer has withheld and paid the taxes in advance. So this Form 15A is usually given on a yearly basis to the employee by the employer. So here, before remitting any overseas payment, the banks would now require to also present a certificate of personal income tax payment by the individual or by the employer. Next one, for payments of interest licenses, royalties and service fees. So you will have to provide a copy of a withholding tax payment or a confirmation of withholding tax exemption. If you are availing any relief under a double tax agreement, then you will have to provide the copy of a certificate of residency issued by the tax authority of the receiving entity or receiving country. And for newly registered taxpayer, the TIN certification issued by the IRD is sufficient. Next slide, please. This one is on tax procedures on foreign currency payments. So previously, tax payments in Myanmar are generally made or generally done in Myanmar Chat. But with this new procedures by the CBM, actually it's the CBM that issued this this directive requiring payments by residents to non-residents will be, I mean, the tax should be paid in the currency where it originally been transacted. So for example, if you have a payment to a Singapore entity, for example, a payment of royalty, then the initial, before this directive, you can pay the amount using the converted Myanmar Chat of the payment. So for example, it is, I mean, the tax is at $100. Before, you have to convert it to Myanmar Chat or make a payment order with the bank, and you can make the payment to the Myanmar Economic Bank in Myanmar Chat. Now, instead of paying in Myanmar Chat, you will have to pay directly using the foreign currency amount. So in order to manage those types of arrangement, the IRD has qualified that if you have an existing Myanmar bank account with a foreign currency, you can make the payment using that foreign currency account in the Myanmar bank. If you don't have any Myanmar bank, but if you are required to remit the payment in such foreign currency, then you can also create an account in the Myanmar state-owned banks, such as the MFTB and MICB. So in this case, it's not any, I mean, the trust of the IRD now is to collect also amounts in foreign currency. So this applies to payments to non-residents, which covers withholding taxes and non-resident individuals who did not stay in Myanmar for for more than 6 months in a given year. Next slide, please. Okay, so this one is on the 2023 Union Tax Law. So actually for the 2023 Union Tax Law, there's not much of a significant change as compared to the prior years. The Union Tax Law is a yearly tax law that is issued by the government, highlighting the changes in the income, in the tax rates, exemptions, and certain administration procedures with regard to income tax, specific goods tax, commercial tax, and gemstone tax. So those types of taxes are covered by the Union Tax Law. So the 2023 Union Tax Law became effective on April 1st, 2023. So for income tax matters, so basically no changes. CIT rate remains at 22%. If the company is listed in the Yangon Stock Exchange, then it can be reduced to 17%. There is a specific provision for companies in the oil and gas exploration sector where they are subject to a 25% tax and not the regular 22% general CIT rate. So for amnesty rates for undisclosed sources of income, which applies to if the a Myanmar citizen would not be able to justify the source of the funds used for buying, constructing major purchases or capital assets. So the rates are, I mean, remain at 3% to 30%. So for personal income tax, the maximum threshold is still at 70 million and up to 25% tax. Also CGT, or capital gains tax, it remains at 10%. So higher capital gains tax for oil and gas exploration sector still applies, which is at 40 to 50%. So under the 2023 Union Tax Law, there are some changes in the specific tax tiers or rates for liquors and other types of specific goods remain. Now for For the specific goods tax, they qualify now an exemption for battery electric vehicles because the government wants to promote the use of the EVs. Next slide, please. So for commercial tax, there are also not much changes in the union tax law. There are additions mostly for BEVs or battery electric vehicles and solar related equipment. So for CT, the rate remains at 5%. There are other rates applicable for certain transactions such as 3% for construction repair or for service income of hotel and tourism, 1% for jewelry, 15% for internet, and a one-time CT for sale of SIM cards. There remains a threshold of 50 million for CT or commercial tax to apply. Now, lastly, gemstone tax, not much significant change, but they have just removed the exemption on diamonds and emeralds where now sale of raw or finished goods or finished jewelry would be subject to 5 to 11%. Next slide, please. So here are the year-end tax compliance reminders. So for fiscal year ended 31st of March 2023, so the deadline of the annual tax filing is by end of this month, which is June 30th. So for the annual tax filing, there are four types of returns that are normally submitted. I mean, three types of returns that are normally submitted. First is the annual corporate income tax return. Second is the annual commercial tax return. And third is the annual salary statement or the personal income tax of the employees. All of them are due June 30. So for the annual corporate income tax return, the company, even if it's dormant, even if it's non-operating, need to submit a CIT return, including all attachments to the IRD. Before the deadline. So the filing of the corporate income tax, it's through online. And you will also have to provide a copy of the signed document for the signatory of the return. So another return that also needs to be filed is annual commercial tax return. So commercial tax return, it's payable on a monthly basis. A quarterly return is also filed. And lastly, an annual commercial tax return should also be filed. So the documents required normally are the commercial tax return, reconciliation of revenue, and supporting documents such as the Form 32 or Form 31 for input tax claims. Lastly, annual salary statement. This is the based on the prescribed format of the IRD. So it is also filed online. So this summarizes all tax payments that were withheld by your employer. So it is the obligation of your employer or the company to submit this annual salary statement. And at the same time, prepare a Form 15A to be provided to the employee for the copy of the employee. So all these three returns need to be filed before the due date. I just want to also emphasize, going back to the annual corporate income tax return, that this applies even to nonprofit organizations, even to those that were not fully liquidated, and those that are dormant companies. So as long as you have not officially deregistered or officially liquidated, you are still required to file annual corporate income tax return for the year. Also for annual commercial tax return, even if you are exempted from commercial tax, even if you have no commercial tax payable during the year, you are also still required to file annual commercial tax return. So all tax returns now are filed online. There is also an additional tax return filing if you sold or transferred any capital asset during the year. So in that case, you will also be required to submit an annual consolidated capital gains tax return, but it's on a case-to-case basis. So it depends on whether the company has disposals of fixed assets or capital assets during the year. So we also would like to highlight the penalty for the late filing of a return, where a penalty can be charged with a minimum of 100,000 CHAT, or 5% of the tax due plus 1% interest for each month of failure. There could also be a higher penalty that may apply if it's on account of deliberate failure to file tax return. So those are the year-end tax compliance reminders, and we also remind everyone for the company to file the returns on time. Next slide, please. Okay, so those are the legal and tax portions of our presentation. Now we will go to the Q&A. First, we can go through some of the pre-submitted Q&A that we have received. Maybe Nick. Hello, Nick.
Yep. Can you hear me? Yes. Thanks. Yes, we've got a few written questions that we can answer now, which haven't been covered in the talk we've just had. We were asked whether there are any regulatory guidelines on debt restructuring, and we can say there are no specific regulatory guidelines, but you will need to get the approval of the central bank where you're changing the terms of the interest payments or the loan repayments, which were approved by the bank when you took out the loan in the first place. And we've got a question about legal implications of the sale of receivables. If international lenders had the opportunity to sell receivables from MFIs in Myanmar, would these transactions need regulatory approval? Yes, we think they would, because these are just transfer of the loan obligations to a new lender. We don't see whether how this would benefit the assignees, because they still have got issues with transferring the funds out of Myanmar in repayment of the loan. Can we use property as collateral, and if so, how to enforce with foreign ownership restrictions? It's not quite related to this subject, but yes, foreigners can take security over property, but only long-term leases of land, because you're not allowed to own, as a foreigner, you're not allowed to own land, a title. It's forbidden under Myanmar law. So yeah, those are all the questions that we had. We've also got some questions on the sidebar, which I'm replying to. So I can continue to do that if you leave it open.
Okay. For the tax questions, with respect to the SOP from the MOPF, what alternative can be made if the tax office has not updated the SAS-1? So actually, this is one of the issues commonly encountered now. The requirement of the bank is for the taxpayer to provide a copy of the SAS-1. But the issue is the SAS-1 is not readily available from the tax office. So from our discussions with tax office, also with certain banks, banks can accept SAS-1 for the last 2 years. I mean, within the last 2 years prior to the year of payment. So for example, in this financial year 2023-24, they can accept the self-assessment confirmation for the last 2 years prior to the current year. If the SAS 1 is not yet available, then banks may also accept, subject to a copy of a recommendation letter from the IRD saying why the SAS 1 is not yet available at the time of filing. Now, the taxpayer can also submit a request a request to expedite the processing of the SAS 1 to the tax office. So they have document at least to show or to prove to the banks that they have properly declared the taxes during the last 2 years. Another question is there a requirement to notify the tax office or the IRD on changes related to financial restructurings? So currently under the tax administration law, there is no requirement to notify the IRD on changes in financial structures. But if those changes would affect a shareholding in cases of conversion of debt to equity conversion, and also it would change any update on the MICO or company MICO extract or the company information, then we suggest at least a notification for submission to the IRD will be made. Another question for tax is for payments for services rendered offshore, do I still need to get evidence of withholding tax exemption? Even if the services are not performed in Myanmar? Actually, this is a tricky question on the request for documents by the bank, because if the services are not rendered in Myanmar, there is no requirement to make a withholding tax, because the withholding tax should only apply on services rendered in Myanmar. But there had been issuances before under different practice statements. First, they provided a threshold of 100,000 where you can self-assess. Now they change it that even if you have, they removed the threshold, and if you want to claim an exemption from withholding tax, you need to apply for a confirmation from the IRD. And last, for the SOP, does it mean that the withholding tax need to be paid first before payment is made? Actually, this is also a key consideration that most of our clients also face, because the requirement of the banks now would be to provide us a copy of withholding tax certificate. Now, under the withholding tax rules, a taxpayer can make the payment within 15 days from the date of payment or from the date of the deduction. So that means that if the banks would now require a copy of withholding tax certification at the time, before the remittance is given, it means that the taxpayer would now have to withhold first before the actual remittance of the payment is made. So that creates a cash flow issue and an issue for some of our taxpayers. And we hope that the IRD would also clarify on this regard, because this is also one of the issues, important issues that should also be assessed in relation to the SOP of the MOPF. How about you, Nick? Any additional questions from?
No, I've got nothing else. I'm just, yep, no.
Okay. I think from our side, we thank you for everyone for attending our presentation. If you have any question, feel free to reach out to either me or Nick. And we appreciate if you can also provide inputs on your feedback on our presentation in the QR code as seen on the screen.